Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special edition and format for the Radulich and Broadcasting Network Summer Blockbuster Review Series featuring Transformers, Age of Extinction. I suppose it's only fitting that discussing a bloated walking catastrophe, Blog Talk Radio decided to crap out on us tonight, so we're here on Google Hangouts, and we thank you also very much for joining us here, or YouTube, or however you happen to have come to us. We appreciate it. And we apologize for the lateness, the tardiness, for any of you who are listening live. Sorry. Call Blog Talk Radio, bomb them with emails, or find their place of business and throw fecal matter at them. I don't care that much. I'm good with any of the above. All right. As I mentioned, we are talking about the big summer blockbuster, the apparently already $100 million-plus money-making venture that was the fourth Transformers movie. This ought to be fun, partially because my esteemed co-host, the man without pants, he hates pants more than I hate Ben Stiller, everybody, and I hate Ben Stiller. But Mark Radulich is still here with us, still kicking. Mark, how you doing?
Hate Blog Talk Radio. Hate it. Hate. I take so much pride in these podcasts to the point where my wife, who showed up way too late tonight, comes home. First of all, can I just tell you that my wife says, hey, I'm going to be a little late. A little late is like maybe an hour or so after you say you're going to come home. No, she shows up at 9 o'clock. It's as if she heard me say, I have a podcast at 9 o'clock. And she said, okay, fucker, I'm coming home at 8:55 and then demand you help me with the children. Asshole. That's what I think she's thinking. She's right next to me, by the way.
I have long since given up anything attempting semblance of understanding women. It just, I don't even bother. It's not worth the energy.
So not only does she come home at like 8:55 and say, hey, I need 2 minutes of help and we have 2 minutes to air and Skype isn't working or Blog Talk Radio or anything, but I'm sitting here in a panic trying to figure out how we're going to get this podcast started. So I'm a little flabbergasted and flummoxed and I'm all nervous and shit. Help me out here.
I'm more than happy to help you. That's what a good wingman is for, right? I provide the calm and the cool, and I will just relax, and you can have your little mini meltdown, and I will guide you through this adventure of Transformers.
I gladly appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
All right. Now, you guys, this wraps up Transformers Week, essentially, here on the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, everybody. It started 6 days ago on my podcast, Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, where I tackled the Decepticons and all of their greatness and why Michael Bay has utterly failed at translating them to the big screen. Mark and Sean Comer on The Long Road to Ruin this Tuesday tackled the first three Transformers movies and how they fell apart, where they were successful, and all that fun stuff. And now here we are, and we're going to tackle this bloated, hulking, three-hour monstrosity. I'm not joking. That's a very mild exaggeration, everybody. This movie is nearly 3 hours long. And if you're wondering what in the world does Michael Bay do when he has 3 hours of airtime, lots and lots of slow-motion explosions. So if you have kids, remember this is at least a two-break movie. All right? if that's your measurement of time, two breaks.
Can I just say that I didn't have a problem with the length of the movie? I mean, look, I'm going to let you guide the ship here as I finally start to settle down. But I want to start off by saying that I didn't feel like the movie was bloated. I didn't feel like the movie was too long. I mean, I understand that's every reviewer's thing now is, oh my God, this is 3 hours of clanking metal, and it's just overwhelming, and why wasn't Tom Bombadil in the movie? But listen, I felt like they were starting a new trilogy here, and they needed time to establish an entirely new set of characters. They were also taking you in an entirely new direction that this series hadn't gone in before. So I felt like 3 hours was necessary. Just like I think it's necessary to take a 120-some-odd page Hobbit book and turn it into three three-hour feature-length movies. Minus the extra footage, which makes the whole thing more than 12 hours. I say more hobbits, more Transformers, more wine, more women, more dinosaurs.
Apparently, as an aside, Miramax would not allow Quentin Tarantino to release Kill Bill as one movie because it was close to 3 hours. Michael Bay, slow motion CGI Transformers. No, no, no. Go ahead.
Well, we've learned a lot since Kill Bill. The whole world has changed.
I'm just saying, if you take like the cut of Kill Bill, that is just one movie, it's awesome. If you have to watch Volume 1 and then Volume 2, it's not a good idea. It doesn't work quite as well. But hey, Michael Bay with yet another loud black person. And apparently a fat black brother, who we never see, but we are led to believe probably suffers from some form of heart condition and likely diabetes. Alright, I think you could have cut 40 minutes out of this movie.
There was nothing that need cutting from
40 minutes.
I frankly think they needed another hour long reel. Just dealing with KSI.
Oh, God.
We needed Stanley Tucci's background, see? We needed his days in the garage, putting together a wooden computer.
We all know the story of Steve Jobs, okay? Who's that?
Is that who that was supposed to be? I would have never have known.
Yes, it was the subtleties are what sold it. I mean, you had to really watch and pay attention.
I'm back in the day when Bloom County used to be in the funnies, their mockery of Apple computers was to have Oliver Jr. running around with a banana Jr., instead of an apple.
That's funny.
They should have called the company Banana.
My biggest thing about Apple is I feel like The Simpsons nailed them when they mocked it. I mean, you have a bunch of rabid fans who will pay out the ass for things that they don't really need and will worship at the altar of Steve Jobs. You have to reach him via submarine. He lives in a pressurized container at the bottom of the ocean.
I would appreciate it, sir, if you would not mock my religion.
No, I mock everything. Okay. Everybody, if you haven't heard The Long Road to Ruin, I'm going to express what Mark expressed on the air for me as far as these movies go. And I have this bit of logic was apparently first published by the BBC, a writer, and brought to my attention by Jeff Harris during our warm-up, I believe, for the 411 Ground and Pound show last Sunday. These movies are porn. Here's what I mean by that. Hang on. No, there's no nudity. There's no... No, no, no. Porn is nothing. It is, here's two people. They're going to have sex. Watch. Now, I don't think you should watch. I have religious and philosophical objections to it. But that's neither here nor there.
Yet he mocks Apple computer.
Yes, I do, and will continue to do so. Here's my point. The plot for any of these Transformers movies may as well be, oh crap, I can't tip the pizza boy. However will I solve this dilemma?
Now, wait just a cotton picking minute here, okay? What I said on The Long Road to Ruin was that these movies, their plots got progressively more convoluted as time wore on. And I even struggled with the first movie's plot. Sean had to kind of bail me out there and remind me of some of the details because I had a hard time remembering what exactly the Decepticons were chasing in order to bring Megatron back to life and then what the endgame was. This was pretty straightforward. After the Battle of Chicago, which I loved, the fact that they played on a world after the Battle of Chicago.
I agree.
So, the humans, in conjunction with Apple computers and its Transformer bounty hunter, are killing Transformers. They say they're only killing what's left of the Decepticons, but they're really killing all of the Transformers, taking their parts and giving them to KSI so KSI can build their own Transformers. Ta-da! That was the most straightforward plot of them all. That's not That's not porn. Now, I can understand if you're saying that these are essentially three-hour demo reels of action sequences.
Here's my point. And porn and associated products are just spectacle. You have, on occasion, the barest semblance of, hey, here's a story. Here's why. Here's motivation. It's all a setup for, hey, watch this. That's all it is, and that's all these movies are. We have, oh, look, there's another Transformer. He wants to get stuff from these Transformers, and Stanley Tucci wants to make Transformers, and Kelsey Grammer is evil. Watch shit blow up.
See, I vehemently disagree with all of this. If you want to say that about The Phantom Menace, where the acting was so wooden, it could have been comparable to porn. In fact, I've seen better acting in pornography at times. And you want to say that this was a 2+ hour demo reel of CGI and special effects. Okay, valid point. Phantom Menace sucks. George Lucas sucks.
I agree with one of those. Nah, I agree with both, now that I think about it.
But I feel like this movie, and you are one of the people joining in the chorus of giving this movie short shrift. I didn't feel like the characters were one-dimensional at all. I felt like Kelsey Grammer's paranoid CIA character was pretty well developed. I thought he had good motivation. I thought Stanley Tucci's knockoff of Steve Jobs was fairly well developed and had good motivations. Wahlberg sometimes comes across a little hammy, but I thought he was a far improvement of Shia LaBeouf.
It's a lateral move for me.
But the only one that sort of has a hard time carrying her part is the girl, but she's Princess Leia in this anyway. She's just there to be saved.
All right. I don't necessarily disagree with you on elements of this, and my point was these movies are not interested necessarily in storytelling. They are interested in how can we move things so more things go boom, and you can watch all of these slow-mo sequences with a Victoria's Secret ad plastered squarely in the middle of the screen for a full 5 seconds, and oh look, Mark Wahlberg has to drink Bud Light and intimidate a driver who just wants to see his Geico app card.
Well,
product placement, everybody.
The movie's got to make money somehow.
Yeah, it's not like they did $100 million over a 2-day period.
They did $100 million in the theater I saw it in. That place was so packed.
Golly. Okay. Let me say this, and I hate things about this movie. I really, really do. There are things about this movie, including the dialogue, 9 times out of 10, excessive CGI, at times that looks like bad CGI. Hang on. Some of this looks beautiful. Some of this looks like a 10-year-old did it in his spare time between classes. And there's a delineation there. Some of this is awesome from a visual standpoint. Some of it looks half-assed. And I'm not going to lump the whole thing together because, again, parts are beautiful, parts are not. And I feel it's overlong. But to your point, there's a couple of things that I did like about this movie. And I want to start off with the obvious. I have done nothing but complain throughout the first 3 movies that Michael Bay uses the Transformers robots as props to make things go boom instead of treating them as characters. We finally shifted a little bit of that in this one, and we got some actual characterization. Although why Bumblebee still cannot speak is absolutely beyond me. Apparently Mark Wahlberg can bring Optimus Prime from the brink of death to full-fledged ass-kicking machine again. Nah, I can't fix Bumblebee's voice.
His voice box is really complicated technology.
Yeah, really? Okay.
No, okay, let me weigh in.
I get that it's his gimmick. I get that, and I understand. It just... I suppose I shouldn't be looking for minor logic lapses in a movie like this.
Well, no, I mean, let's dissect it where it needs dissection. Let's talk about the characterizations of what are supposed to be the feature in these movies, and that is the Transformers themselves, the robots. The weakness of the original trilogy is that they gave Optimus Prime a character, they gave Bumblebee a character, and Megatron, and everything else is... they're just...
I'd say they didn't even do Megatron anything approaching in a decent amount of characterization.
Well, I think in their minds they did.
So we're going to, oh, black people are loud, and I can't mix red and green. That's where we're going back to with this? That's a fair
Megatron
point.
Megatron did the bad guys. So what Megatron is going to do, he's going to stand on the camera, he's going to yell at Optimus Prime and say, blah, 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 blah.
I may not be a smart man, but I know how to make money. I invested in this fruit company run by Stanley Tucci, and now I don't have to worry about money no more, and Bubba's mom don't have to clean people's houses. So then I went to the White House again and met the President of these United States again.
That's my impression of Michael Bay as being mildly mentally retarded, and Robert Winfrey's impression of Michael Bay as Forrest Gump, everyone, in case
a
you were...
bit, yeah. I apologize if that wasn't clear.
In case people didn't get it. But no, look.
Okay, can I also complain about one more thing? Because this bugged me right from the start. And then I will let you go on with your point. And I will be quick about this. Mark Wahlberg is the only man alive who apparently was born and raised in a small town in Texas. Still sounds like he was raised just outside of Boston. And to the boyfriend, either you've got an Irish accent or you don't. You can't. I imagine there was someone on set with a blowgun who, after five lines of dialogue when he dropped it, would shoot him in the back of the head with a pellet. And you go, oh, yeah, no. Oh, no, I love the Irish Isles. I've just got to quote me a poem. And don't you dare call me a leprechaun. Despite the fact that every one of your ancestors came over on a boat, you hypocritic bastard.
Are you done yet?
Okay. Now, minor complaint. Accent was bad. The other guy, if you have an accent, keep it the whole time. And if you don't have an actor who can keep his accent consistently, one way or the other, mind you, don't write him that way. Real simple fixes. Okay. I'm done with that part.
Okay. First of all,
I apologize for interrupting you.
Michael Bay doesn't understand that different parts of the country have different dialects.
I'm sure of that.
So you can't blame Mark Wahlberg when I'm sure he tried to do a southern accent and Michael Bay said, why are you talking like Kurt Cobain or that you have marbles in your mouth? Just talk regular.
Well, I would, except he couldn't do a southern accent when he was supposed to be a 6-foot-tall badass Navy SEAL from Texas and instead is a 5-foot-nothing 40-year-old from Boston. The movie I'm referencing is Lone Survivor, by the way.
So,
total aside.
We were talking about characters, okay? And yes. I want to finish my point about the characterization of the Transformers because I'm gonna keep coming back to the same point.
Okay.
Transformers: Age of Extinction is a huge improvement on the series and the best one yet. Because it and I say that because it improved on the characterization, it improved on the streamlinedness of the plot and it also improved on the CGI and the special effect battle scenes where you can actually tell who's fighting what.
Absolutely.
Which you really couldn't do in the previous three movies. They were just a jumbled mess. So, yeah. And if you're going to be fair to Flair, you have to say that this movie is an improvement on the previous three when almost all of the elements were better than the previous three. Now, sticking with the characters for just one moment. As I said before, one of the major failures of the original trilogy was that only Prime and Bumblebee really got personalities and got characterization among the Autobots. And you and I can sort of quibble about Megatron and to a lesser degree Starscream, but then everything else is just fodder. They're just throwing robots at you and giving them names and hoping that's enough. This is the first time they focused on a core set of Autobots and said, okay, who is Hound? What does he do? What does he sound like? and what's his personality? And they did that for the other two, the other two robots. Which, by the way, once again, people are now pissing and moaning and crying about the insensitive nature of the one voiced by Ken Watanabe.
Watanabe.
And I'm calling bullshit on this.
I'm with you. Why?
He voiced him with his voice. I don't know if he speaks any other way, but to me he said he sounded the same in Godzilla that he sounded in this movie. So what is racially insensitive about this, other than maybe people think talking like a Japanese person is insensitive? I don't know. I'm not racist against Japanese people, but apparently others are. So, Ken Watanabe, talks like a normal Japanese person speaking in English, and people freak out. In any case, this isn't an example of the minstrel bots. If you want a conversation about the minstrel bots, go listen to The Long Road to Ruin. We got into that in detail. But
my only thing was, oh, wait, apparently we have to go full samurai with this? All right.
Yeah,
then
why not?
I rolled with it. And then I just rolled with it. I mean, it's just Ken Watanabe speaking like Ken Watanabe speaks. I mean, John Goodman, who voices Hound, we've got to have a fat old white guy in there. Now, no one's complaining about that.
Right, no, because it's okay to be racist against white people. Hi, Gavin.
As we all know.
In any case.
If you're upset about this, unbunch your panties, people, for crying out loud. I agree that, the minstrel bots from 2 were beyond stupid and probably a little insensitive. I don't think this is. I mean, whining about everything.
So, just to finish this up so we can move on, they focus on a core group of Autobots. They didn't really introduce any other Autobots until the very end with the Dinobots, which I'm sure you and I will talk about at length, but I don't want to get into it right now.
A little.
I felt like all of the Autobots had personalities. They had something to do. You had the one who was just like, fuck the Earthlings. Let's just do away with them and get out of here. You had the Japanese samurai one who was just Japanese samurai guy. Bumblebee was his usual self. Hound was the old, tired, loyal soldier. Which I love John Goodman's portrayal of Hound.
Yes. I had such a great time listening to him. You're just too weird to exist anymore.
I enjoyed John Goodman as an actor, and I thought his portrayal of Hound was great. But I also, as a fan, remember, I grew up with the Transformers. I watched the cartoon. I had the toys, and the very first Transformer I owned was Hound. So he had a special place in my heart here. Before I ever had an Optimus Prime or a Megatron, I had Hound, and I always used to look forward when he was featured in an episode. But it was great to see him portrayed on screen. So. And on the other side of that, you had Lockdown, who, what can one say about Lockdown? He was supposed to be an interstellar Transformer bounty hunter. And, much like, say something like Boba Fett or, any character that has that sort of a background to them, they're not going to be overwhelmed with personality. They're there to do business, and business is what they do. And he was a proper menacing bad guy for Optimus Prime and the Autobots.
Yeah, there's a degree of at the end there when he says, "No, it's my fight, and you're all going to die." You get, there's a little bit of, I know we're gonna win because it's Michael Bay. It wouldn't shock me if he killed at least one of them first.
Sure.
Thing going on.
Sure. So like I said, I think it's unfair for people to criticize this movie and say, this is just more of the same. It's not more of the same. More of the same is if they had thrown a bunch of Transformers on the screen and they were all interchangeable, like they were in the past.
More of the same is, it's not the most valid of complaints. It is in the sense that if you've seen the rest of the Transformers movies, it's still just another Michael Bay Transformers movie.
I'm going to continue to...
On the whole, hang on, it's a broad generalization.
Or a generalization about broads?
Something like that, yes. Who we have another useless one of.
Okay, so let's talk about the humans, shall we? Now...
Mark Wahlberg. Here's my thing. If you need a short guy who is more than a little crazy and has a degree of versatility, spend the extra money and get Tom Cruise.
I don't... No. We don't need Tom Cruise in a Transformers movie.
We need Mark Wahlberg.
Mark Wahlberg was perfectly serviceable. Maybe there was somebody out there who might have done a better job with it, but ultimately,
I doubt it.
Ultimately, all you have to have is a sympathetic action hero running around saying, "That's my daughter!" and shooting at robots.
Here's my big gripe. There was a chance this could have been The Rock.
Was there?
Yeah, apparently when shooting Pain and Gain, another Michael Bay film which streams on Netflix, which stars Dwayne Johnson and Mark Wahlberg, and I think Tony Shalhoub's in there as well, he apparently offered The Rock, said, "Hey, you know, shooting Transformers 4, why don't, you know, I would love to have you in it." And The Rock was already committed to filming Hercules.
See, here's
my
problem.
So instead, he's like, oh, I imagine he talked with The Rock and then went to Mark Wahlberg's trailer afterwards and said, "So I'm really excited about this. Inside, he's dead." Like, oh, God, you wanted The Rock. But you're already here. Why not?
Here's what I will tell you why Mark Wahlberg was a better choice than The Rock. And let me get through this.
Okay.
The Rock is bigger than life. The Rock, when he comes on screen, feels like he could have pushed Prime aside and rode Grimlock himself. Okay, it looks like he could have stood toe to toe with Lockdown and punched him dead up in his shit. That's how big The Rock is. That's not what the character called for. It didn't call for a guy who looks like a bigger Superman than Henry Cavill, okay? They were looking for someone who was going to be completely out of his element, that that when they put him in danger, look like he was in danger. If you try putting The Rock in those positions, he'll literally look like he could take out the Transformers himself by giving it the rock bottom.
Okay, now let me ask you this. You think Michael Bay is so committed to script and characterization that they wouldn't have just fixed that if The Rock had signed on?
Well, no, I don't. I think that
don't think it would. Is all right. We got The Rock. This part changes.
No, I don't. I don't think they would have. I think the part called for a devoted father of an unusually hot 17-year-old, and he's he's poor. He's trying to make ends meet, and he accidentally finds Optimus Prime, and that's what gets our movie going. That doesn't work if he's The Rock. If he's The Rock, he would have just eaten the Transformer for breakfast and spit bullets. I mean, it's that's just not what the movie called for. If you don't like Mark Wahlberg, I'm sure there were other choices, but you had to find an action hero with a sense of vulnerability. The Rock in no way presents vulnerability on screen. He looks like he's made of chrome.
I understand what you're saying. I suppose my point would have been is, if The Rock had said, "Sure, I'd love to do Transformers," they would have scrapped the entire character that was Cade Yeager and rewritten it as something else.
I disagree. I feel like...
Oh, come on. You really think that they wouldn't have just said, "Okay, writing staff, I know you worked on this, but first of all, it's a Michael Bay movie, so no one gives a crap about the actual writing except people who go online and complain. And we got The Rock, so you're now writing a soldier on leave instead of a down-on-his-luck inventor. You're going to tell me they wouldn't have just done that?"
Maybe, but I still feel like the movie is then out of balance. Here's what I'm telling you. Michael Bay may have wanted The Rock because The Rock brings in $1 million just by showing up in your picture. Yeah, if Frozen 2, ever gets made and The Rock shows up, he brings with him $1 million.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just wherever he goes, money follows him. And I say this as not the world's biggest Rock fan, but you can't deny the success he has in films. So there you have it. But here's the problem. The movie is balanced between these robots who are destroying cities and are just larger-than-life sci-fi characters. You have to balance that with humans that are out of their element and vulnerable. This is why Kelsey Grammer is sort of an understated CIA spook in a suit. This is why they have Stanley Tucci in the movie playing Steve Jobs. You need
but scream, "Oh my God," over and over and over again.
But that's what you need, because why do you need the Transformers in the movie if you've got a bunch of G.I. Joes? Now, and I know there's talk out there of a G.I. Joe Transformers crossover. Yeesh. worked in the comic books.
Why?
Not sure it's going to work on screen.
That would not work at all.
But do you see what I'm saying? You in a movie, you have to, you know, you have to have pauses. You have to give opportunities for the audience to sort of catch their breath. You have to have balance between, you know, your larger than life things and your run of the mill everyday things. If you start to have too much of one thing, it sounds like death metal. You know, it's just one note coming at you as loud as possible.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree with your general perspective. I'm just, again, I also freely admit that my general malaise and kind of meh towards Mark Wahlberg is not at all average, so.
Look, I know everyone, I know it's a cool thing to hate on Mark Wahlberg, and it's not like he's Sir Patrick Stewart or anything, but I think he does a serviceable job of being, you know, the fish out of water, destitute father who's just trying to do right by his daughter, and he gets put into amazing circumstances that he didn't see coming. I mean, a lot of this movie is, you know, he's got some degree of control over his situation at home. There's a usualness, there's a comfort, and suddenly everything is upended with the sight of this Transformer. And at that point, he's just reacting, and they're on the run. There's not a whole lot of time for this character to sort of catch his breath and think about what he's doing. He's constantly having to react to things. First, he's reacting to the fact that he's discovered an alien in his garage. Then he's reacting to the CIA almost murdering his daughter. Then he's reacting to the CIA chasing him through the streets of Texas, USA, in case you thought it was Texas, Belgium. I stole that joke. I have to be honest. That, you know, then there, you know, then his daughter is, then his friend is blown up. Then his daughter is kidnapped onto an alien shuttle.
Can I just say thank you to that? Look, here's, if I had not read a synopsis of the plot prior to actually seeing the movie, I would have been so angry had that character not died. Dude, I wanted him to die sooner. He shows up, and three lines in, I remember, I went, oh, thank God you die.
But do you see what I'm saying? It isn't until, you know, we're an hour or so into the movie where he has to, where he can finally take a breath and just stop reacting. And even then, he's still having to figure out, okay, my life is in total shambles now. We're on the run from this, from the government.
I have time to do this exhaustive recon of a highly secured government installation.
What was he supposed to do?
Now, here's my thing about that is just I hate movies that provide no time context.
Okay.
And it's a big gripe I have, and I had it actually with the Red Dawn remake, among other gripes. There's no passage of, you have no chronological point of reference. I mean, in the original, they delineated things by month, and you had a big thing, and then you actually had a title card come along the bottom that said, it's January, in addition to the fact that, hey, it's snowing. You need another clue. Okay, it's the 80s. I'll give you that. And here it's just, okay, Kelsey Grammer is in one scene running a black CIA op in the neck, which I presume exists in, you know, Langley, Virginia. In the next scene, he walks by his black ops team, still located in Anytown, Texas, and goes, that was a failure. You got your ass kicked by a girl and a broken-down inventor that goes on your resume. And the same with all of you. Last I checked, that's a 3 to 4 hour flight.
No, he's orbiting the Earth in the space shuttle. See, Kelsey Grammer was up in the space shuttle, orbiting the Earth, and that is how he was able to get. It's a Michael Bay film. Get a hold of yourself.
It's indicative of my complaint. I'm not hung up on that scene necessarily. It's more that there is no sense of time passage in this movie.
He was nice enough to tell you that Texas was in the USA. Isn't that enough? And that Hong Kong is in China.
Nice enough to have the Autobots apparently hide out in Moab.
So, moving
it's
on.
It's not like
this.
That's a national park or anything with rangers and a good flow of tourism during the midsummer.
Nobody goes to parks anymore. We have the internet. Now listen, you know, you want to talk about, like I said, I thought Wahlberg was fine and for what they needed him to do in this movie.
Objectively speaking, yes, he's fine. I will no longer complain about him.
Okay,
about his dialogue, but that's about it.
Let's talk about
not at all his fault.
Let's talk about Stanley Tucci.
The Kelsey jet.
Let's talk about Stanley Tucci for a moment. You know,
God bless Stanley Tucci.
I thought he played his part to a T. I thought he was a well-rounded character. I thought he had a great motivation. You know, somebody
having apparently two love interests.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's rich. I'm surprised he doesn't have a harem. Why does that bother you?
It bothers me because you could have cut the entirety of, hey, random U.S. geologist who found the Dinobots and now apparently has a deep backstory with Stanley Tucci, and, oh, look, I think this Chinese woman is hot. We don't need that.
The man was under duress.
Cut out 40 minutes of this movie, and it's better on the whole. This contributes to it. When I call this movie bloated, it's, hey, look, here's an ancillary character to an ancillary character, and we're going to give them a bunch of dialogue and all of these sequences. And like,
Well, no, you don't understand. See, the interest shifted from the geologist to the Chinese Chinaman because she was saving him and he was in danger. It's like a Florence Nightingale effect. See, she was the hero that he needed. And that's why his love interest moved from the geologist to the Chinese Chinaman.
Never mind that the geologist should have never shown back up on my screen after, oh, look, Dinobots.
So Stanley Tucci was fine. I thought Kelsey Grammer played his role. You know, he was the main villain in this thing.
More Kelsey Grammer. We spend the entire second act without Kelsey Grammer, and it hurts the movie.
No, it doesn't. You needed to, people are out there arguing that this movie is, you know, just so long and they're throwing so many things at you. The second act, they were taking a time out to just get things established after, you know, the roar of the beginning of the movie.
I'm not saying we can't have a break in the action. I'm saying you go 45, 50 minutes without Kelsey Grammer, who is one of your primary antagonists.
I think he did his part for God and Country to get the movie going, and then they had to do other stuff. Remember, you don't even meet the Stanley...
Clearly need more jokes about Mark Wahlberg not liking his daughter dating a man.
All right. You want me to say something negative about this film? You want me to admit the film has one or two flaws? The boyfriend.
Weak. He should have died with the other guy. God. Well,
I have to admit, he was another do-nothing character. At least the girl had the good sense to get herself captured. This idiot, there's no arc there that I could see. You know, I mean, at a moment where he's trying to, where he could have been a hero, and I could have spent this review saying, see how he starts off one way, and then he rises to the occasion.
Instead, he does exactly what Mark Wahlberg was saying, don't bitch out on me.
Right, he gives up.
He should have been shot right there. Look,
I agree with you.
An automated robot, I surrender. Blow his head off. And let's just rid us all of this crap.
Yeah, I don't understand. Other than, you know, Michael Bay was sitting in the director's chair looking through the script and going, "Die! We need a guy who drives the car very fast." Well, why don't you just have Mark Wahlberg do that? Well, why don't you, in addition to being a mechanic,
he started doing his inventing after he was crippled in a race car injury.
Yeah, or just like his NASCAR career is over and now he's sort of a...
It's Texas. Everyone drives NASCAR, right?
Right. So there's an ADA
Michael
or something.
Bay generalizations.
So like there's an ADA next to him going, Michael, why don't we just ditch this character and we'll just have Mark... No, we need to have the guy who drives the car fast.
And he needs to speak with the Irish accent because I was looking at a box of Lucky Charms at the time and thought we need that.
I'm gonna forgive him on the accent thing because I see that a lot in movies now where people can't keep up their accents.
Michael Fassbender couldn't keep up his accent. No. Michael Fassbender in First Class puts on the helmet and becomes Irish.
Like you do.
I will say this, in Days of Future Past, he did a much better job of having a consistent accent.
I want to say the guy that
Charlie
plays...
Charlie Hunnam.
I want to say the guy that plays Thor also. Oh, you know what? It's the dude from Pacific Rim, the star
Charlie
of that
Hunnam.
Movie. Yeah, he can't keep his accent straight either.
No, he has a really hard time with that. And again, my point being, all the accents in Pacific Rim were awful. With the exception of Idris Elba, who just got to use his normal speaking voice. Charlie Hunnam couldn't suppress his English accent the whole time, and the two guys they had doing Australian accents sounded like they heard a distorted version of Crocodile Dundee.
So, for the most part,
it bugs me when anyone does it. I'll just say that. This is not just, I'm not pointing a finger at him and going, how dare you, how dare you. It's all of you people. Come on, get it together. Okay.
So let's move on from characters and just sum this up by saying the majority of the characters in this movie were either serviceable or great. We've just spent the last almost an hour talking about the characters, and your big complaints are the boyfriend driver was useless and couldn't keep his accent straight, and you're racist against Mark Wahlberg. Everybody else you agreed with me on. So you got
the archaeologist was flat and useless. Chinese chick was flat and useless.
But you mean the Chinese Chinaman?
Yeah, him too. And the point being, as far as characterizations go, this is a massive improvement over Shia LaBeouf, random chicks who can't act and are there to look good, and his parents who are just there to be annoying. I will agree with you wholeheartedly.
There was not a single character in this movie who I hated as much as Shia LaBeouf's parents. Not only that, but there was not a single character in this movie who I hated as much as Shia LaBeouf by the time we got to the third movie. I honestly felt the characters were
sympathetic. No, I hated that guy that died in the beginning a whole hell of a lot.
That's the thing. I felt like if they had kept him around the entire movie, yes, eventually he would have gotten on.
I imagine there was some assistant director who went to Michael Bay and said, now, this tertiary character of Shia LaBeouf's roommate from Transformers 2. Everybody hated him after he got them to John Turturro. Maybe we can fix this. Okay, he dies here.
We're going to make the guy go boom.
He didn't even blow up. He, like, turned into metal. I was so disappointed. It's like, blow the guy up.
I thought it looked cool. I thought it was a cool visual.
It would have been so much cooler if Lockdown had, like, driven through him after he detonated it.
Sure. The girl is passable. She has one role. And look, she's a far superior actress than Megan Fox. She's a far more sympathetic character than Megan Fox's
random
character.
I'll give you that. Congratulations. You have moved from the absolute dregs of humanity to the dregs of attractive women who can act.
See? This is already an A-plus movie.
No! I will not move my standard of excellence because you improved. You went from F minus to the nth to D minus.
Hang on, Melissa. In the American education system, right? If you started out as an F school, right, and you moved to a C school, right? This is a C compared to the first three movies.
Minus.
This is a B plus.
C
okay?
Minus.
So wouldn't
I will not
call
associate
that
this with Daniel Bryan and his apparent level of excellence, which is for whatever reason just not enough.
So wouldn't you say that's a high level of success? There you go. My wife just said it's success. Moving on. So let's talk about...
Oh, yes, using the vaunted American educational systems grading scale.
Sure.
Okay, we moved from F minus to the nth to F minus 5. We have now gone from nth, which is exponential, to a definable exponent. I will give you that.
I'm going to ask you now, instead of just moving on to the next thing.
All right.
What is it? What was your number one thing about this? I want you to, and I'm dead serious about this. Let's get all the sillies out.
Okay.
And let's find our zen, please.
No jokes.
Okay. Robert Winfrey.
Yes, sir.
Robert Mayflower Winfrey.
Alan.
Whatever.
My middle name is not Mayflower.
Robert Alan Winfrey.
Thank you.
What was it about this movie, independent of everything else you know about it, its director, its history, the fact that this used to be a 22-minute commercial to sell plastic toys, divorcing yourself from all of that, what is it about this movie, independently of all of its context, you didn't like the most?
The most?
The most.
One thing. Honestly, the length killed this movie for me.
Okay.
You make me pick one thing that I dislike about this movie the most. Length is the... When I said you could cut 40 minutes out of this, that was not hyperbole. That was not me trying to be funny. That was... I legitimately think 40 minutes of this crap, and not all the movie is crap, mind you. There's 40 minutes of crap that could be cut from this movie, and the whole thing would have been much better.
Okay, I'm going to give you four places you have to cut 10 minutes from apiece.
Four places, 10 minutes apiece.
Places, 10 minutes apiece, 40 minutes.
Okay, we absolutely did not need at least two of the extemporaneous sequences wherein Mark Wahlberg pseudo-bonds with useless, supposed-to-be Irish guy while his daughter plays with lights in the background or sleeps on chairs in a horribly uncomfortable position, mind you, with no support to the lower back.
Okay, I disagree, but go on.
I didn't say all of them. I said you could trim them. So let's... Again, we can shave here. We didn't need a bunch of Stanley Tucci's character. There were scenes in that, and I loved his portrayal. I like Stanley Tucci. There were sequences with him that we did not need. There was way too much of him running around with the bomb yelling. Now, I get it. You're carrying the bomb.
In defense of that, some days it's just you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yes, Adam West, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. You know, let me say this. If he had actually said that, I might have forgiven him.
Dude, it would have been awesome, but somebody would have had to have gone up to Michael Bay and say, hey, Michael Bay, back in the 60s, there was this Batman movie where Adam West runs around with a giant, like, Acme bomb, and he can't get rid of it. You know, he runs over here and there's nuns, and he runs over here and there's birds, and he runs over here and there's children, and he pans to the camera, breaks the fourth wall, and says, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. Wouldn't it be funny if we gave that to Stanley Tucci? And Michael Bay turned around and said, what's Batman? So, go ahead.
His scene wherein he unloads all, he emotionally vomits on the guy who doesn't speak English in the elevator. Okay, I don't need that. I don't need him breaking down into hysterics because apparently his immature technician sent, oh, range of a tactical nuke, LOL. Let's never mind the fact that different nuclear devices have different blast radiuses. It's about the radii, thank you. And feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but my point being, okay, the radius of a tactical nuke. Well, is that kilotons or megatons? Because that tacks on a few miles.
Why are you weighing down my sci-fi movie with science?
Because it's a sci-fi movie, so there should be a degree of science. Here's another one. Are we detonating it in the atmosphere, or is it a ground detonation?
You're asking way too many questions.
My point being, if he had just come back and said... If this text message, which for whatever reason is littered with smiley faces, bear in mind, not on his phone, these stupid technicians who are screwing around with Transformium, and I will give you a pass on the stupid name, because
That name is brilliant.
Elements have stupid names, including apparently unobtainium, which has been used in no fewer than 5 movies. Never mind. I'm not going off on the tangent. Apparently these guys felt compelled to add a bunch of heart smiley faces and an all caps LOL to, you're carrying a device that would level a large city. I mean, you could have said it's got a blast radius of 5 miles, and he could have had the same reaction without stupid ambiguity.
I think the emoticons were to appeal to the younger generation of moviegoers that are seeing this thing. You have to know how to speak to your audience.
Yes, with a 2-second clip of LOLOL.
You know what? I guarantee you, of all the talk about transforming, programmable, codable metal, and all of the sci-fi talk in these movies, I guarantee you 90% of the audience, all they understood was the emoticons. My wife just nodded her head.
I don't disagree with your assessment. It aggravates me personally.
Okay.
The action sequence wherein the Transformers... what was the third? Not the final one. The final one, I accept that's going to be long and drawn out, though you could shave some time there. The crap aboard the spaceship could have certainly been cut down.
Yeah, I agree. That is one of the places where I agree with you. I disagree with the first two, but I absolutely agree.
You didn't need them breaking into the train yard for that. I mean, come on. There are I'm not saying all of them. I'm not saying all of the moments between them. I agree with you. You need those breaks in the action. You need to be given a reason to care about the characters.
Right.
I understood that. In addition to your, I would say, slightly overlong exposition at the beginning of the movie.
I'll give you that one. They really needed to get to Mark Wahlberg and Optimus Prime a little bit faster. Here's where, before you say your fourth one, where I'll agree with you in terms of...
one, I think.
No, you said cut Stanley Tucci from the movie.
I didn't say from the movie. I said you could shave.
I heard from the movie.
Nine different scenes of him running around screaming, carrying the bomb.
I say we need more of that.
I don't need that many.
Give me an hour of Stanley Tucci yelling, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Well, if you're going to make the comedy, okay, but in the context of this movie...
Now I just want to do a movie of Stanley Tucci running around with a bomb.
As long as Clucky's sitting on top of the bomb, laughing maniacally, I'm down.
No, but getting to your point about... there were two sequences that I thought, like, ugh... This is getting a little out of hand. One of them was the rescue scene with Princess Leia aboard lockdown ship. First of all, they shot that thing with so little color, I got confused as to what was happening and where they were in the ship.
Oh, God.
They needed to get there a little faster. They also needed to get to Mark Wahlberg and Optimus Prime a little bit faster. I'm all for, and this is not to say that they should have sacrificed getting to know your characters. The problem is, you had already gotten they beat the fact that he was poor to death. You established his character in the first 10 minutes. I was just saying
you get another 20 repeating all of that.
You cut the bit with the realtor. That's what you cut. That served no purpose. Yeah, that whole sequence with the realtor you cut. You also shave a few minutes from when the CIA shows up, because again, you don't need all that long to build up. Look, if you put a girl, I'm telling you right now, if you letterbox me a guy putting a gun to a 17-year-old girl's head, that's enough tension for me. You don't need any, this is one of those things where someone needed to sit with Michael Bay in the editing room and explain to him how human beings work. Because he thinks that putting a gun to a 17-year-old girl's head is much like a car chase. It needs to be long and drawn out, and you need to build up tension in order to finally have an explosion and a release. No, you don't.
Some things you don't.
No, most people watching a grown man put a gun to the head of a 17-year-old with the intent to kill her, a few seconds of that... You know, show the dad's reaction, go back to the thing again, that's it. That's all you needed. That went on for like an hour and a half.
Way too long. Oh, okay.
That was like the nodding scene from Return of the Jedi, where just everyone's nodding in a circle.
Yes. You could have completely cut his useless assistant. I don't say that about every character that dies, because you need some kind of emotional response to the death and all that fun stuff. He could have died. He could have never been in the movie, and everything would have been fine.
Well, how would he have gotten money for the truck then?
I don't know. Here's my point. If you never write that character, then you have him scraping through his truck, finding his last couple of bucks. You have things you can do without adding time and without adding apparently a California surfer dude in Midland, Texas.
Where the waves are, see?
Isn't Paris, like, actually in kind of the middle of Texas? I mean, if we're near Houston, okay, you got the Gulf, I'll give you. But come on. And since apparently I need one more of these... if it wasn't so visually cool, I would say you could have cut down a fair amount of Lockdown's attack on Hong Kong with his ship. But the giant magnet picking stuff up and dropping, it's pretty cool. The scene before that could have been trimmed. Mark Wahlberg's long-ass chase with the goon could have been trimmed. Here's a side note. What are the odds that Mark Wahlberg finds the one Chinese guy in Hong Kong who has an American football? No. Legitimately, no one in China watches American football, plays American football, is even aware that American football is a thing. Yet, this guy has a football, and we've already established that Mark Wahlberg is stereotypical Texas guy who played football in high school, injured himself and got his girlfriend pregnant on the eve of the big game, and is now living in glory days. Incidentally, I hate Varsity Blues.
I just want to say that your questioning how he could find one guy in all of China that had a football is racist.
It's not racist. It's geographical. That's the rough equivalent of going through downtown New York and finding a guy with a soccer ball.
It's racist. Let's move on.
It's not racist.
All right. Let's. So I disagree with you on the boyfriend. I think you needed those scenes in order to get to know the characters and to see them establish a relationship. You know, movies should have relationships. They were trying to tell, you know, and it's hard to make a movie with relationships when your director doesn't understand human beings. But, you know, they gave it a shot with those two.
One more.
Prime
releasing the Dinobots.
Okay, first of all, that whole sequence moved way too fast. It was like, by the end of it, they really were like, oh my god, this movie is 9 hours long. We need to get the Dinobots in there and save the day. So they rushed through it. There was not enough time spent with Optimus Prime, you know, trying to dominate the Dinobot, dominate Grimlock in order to make him ride with him into battle.
I agree that let me just also say, in addition to the overlong nature of this movie, I felt it was terribly paced. Not in the sense that we need breaks, but in the sense that we get towards the end and everyone goes, oh my gosh, we have to do X, Y, and Z.
You're absolutely right. It actually feels kind of like one of my podcasts, you know, like Long Road to Ruin especially, where we spend a long time talking about the first movie and, you know, we're 2 hours into it and I've got to shut down the podcast because we're running out of time. And we're like, okay, so
if you want to hear us talk about movies 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, and so essentially they take Superman's hair and they make a guy out of it and the movie's over. You know, okay, I don't know what to tell you. Superman 4, it sucked. Yeah, you have to, you know, you're right. There's the problem with this movie, I think, if you take a step back from it, is that it suffers from a lack of editing, and I also think that because Michael, here's the problem, and this is a studio issue. In Michael Bay, we trust, right? So they give him X amount of money, he makes them X to the 10th degree back. So you just let him do whatever he wants.
The decimal place once or twice.
You know, that's the thing. When it's not like, you know, it's a sort of the George Lucas issue. Once you've been established as sort of a mad genius who creates an empire worth billions of dollars, no one then bothers to question you. So no one's sitting there. See, like if you look at some of the behind the scenes stuff for Lord of the Rings, people sat with Peter Jackson and was like, "No, Peter, this needs to go. No, Peter, we need to cut this." You know, there were long discussions about what they were going to keep and what they weren't going to keep in Lord of the Rings. And I'm guessing it's still happening with The Hobbit. No one's doing that with...
Never mind that apparently we had to invent characters to make two longer.
It's a different movie review. But I don't think anyone's doing that with Michael Bay. It's just, it's like they're giving Michael Bay a bunch of Transformer toys and
saying,
make a movie with this.
For as much as we say Michael Bay, you know, mentally handicapped and whatnot, I think a better parallel would be Vince McMahon.
Yeah, actually, no, I think there's a lot of similarities between
Vince McMahon. No, we're doing this. That doesn't make sense. You're fired. We're doing this. Brilliant idea, sir. Damn it, man, you turncoat. Shut up, Floyd. I got a family to feed here.
Not only that, but it's just like, okay, and here's where we're going to put the poopy jokes. Because poopy jokes equal funny.
Mr. McMahon, that's not a good idea. I don't think people will respond well to a joke about projectile vomit. You fired! You! We do this here! Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, Vince McMahon, Michael Bay, same guy. Only Michael Bay, infinitely more successful.
Well, worth infinitely more.
So, I think that there's... If there's one criticism I can give of Age of Extinction, which is just art, my friends, it is, my God, not since Schindler's List has the screen lit up with such beauty in cinema. It's that... No
I'm
one
so
is
tempted to reach through the screen. I'm like, no.
It's that the movie does suffer from a lack of editing. And not because, look, you can make a 3-hour-plus movie, but you have to know how to pace it, and you have to know, you know, where this, you know, where what scene should be, how long, and how you're doing it. You know, there were plenty of movies that captured my interest for 3 hours-plus.
Yes.
And not feel, and not feel like you were, you know, boring the audience, or that you were, or that it was becoming mind-numbing. Here's where I'll give the critics this much. Because the action scenes are not edited enough, and that was what I was going to say. If I could pick 40 minutes to shave off of this film...
You could have taken half of that out of slow-motion explosions.
Well, I was going to say, you know...
We got to get that Victoria's Secret product placement.
The stuff where you have Hound defending the humans in the middle of Hong Kong went on forever and needed to be shaved down. The entire sequence aboard lockdown ship needed to be cut down. The gunplay in, you know, on the front lawn of Mark Wahlberg's house needed to be cut down.
What was that chase sequence that could have been shaved?
All of it.
There was a specific chase sequence, and I can't remember where it falls in the movie because the whole thing runs together.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, there's a chase sequence that goes on for far too long.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not the parts with the human beings that need to be cut here.
A few of them could be shaved, but, yeah, the action sequence.
Right, it's and
I
think
it's a bunch of raw footage. It's kind of what it feels
well,
like.
Well, I again, it's like watching The Phantom Menace. You know, George Lucas just threw tons of CGI on the screen and said, okay, voila, I have a movie. You know, and people were like, that's not what we want to see. We don't want to see a demo reel of your latest CGI creations. And I think that's where Michael Bay sort of loses his audience, because he's thinking, aren't people here to see cars blow up and they're here to see, you know, robots smash things? Well, we are, Michael, but you have to break that up with other stuff. And there's probably the biggest failure of Age to Extinction is that he does not break up enough of the action with other stuff. He just goes, play with toys, knock this over. It's like my daughter. You know, my daughter sits in a massive pile of toys and never stops. And, you know, and it's just toys doing stuff, and there's never any break in this until we say, hey, Lily, go potty. There's not enough potty breaks in this movie.
Near teenagers who were sitting next to me in the theater.
I was going to say, I just compared Transformers Age of Extinction to potty training a 3-year-old.
I don't think you would be terribly far off in some of those respects. my other minor gripe. Apparently Optimus Prime now has rockets on his legs that can help him achieve orbit.
That was awesome.
Where were those for the rest of the movie? Oh, I'll just change into a beat-down old semi and try to run away from this helicopter.
They were only meant for interstellar travel.
Don't give me that. I would go with you if he's just jumping away from that explosion at the very end. He has, you know, maybe limited use out of these. And then at the end, no, I can now fly between planets and herald galactic. No.
They only have one speed, and that's warp.
Don't give me that.
All right.
Also, briefly, when did Optimus Prime become Aragorn?
Awesome.
Fight with me, and I will release you from your prison.
Once again, it's a trope that works in action movies. It was perfectly plausible.
Now, never mind that these are giant Transformers, giant even by our standards, who don't speak the language and turn into dinosaurs that breathe fire. Go be free amongst the people.
Well, look, there's a Jurassic
Park. That won't end badly.
Well, no, wait a minute now. There is a Jurassic Park 4 movie coming out. Maybe they were going to go audition.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Spielberg, I have all of these. You don't need... who executive produced this, by the way. Yeah, that he's going to pick up with Sam Neill and Jeff Goldblum driving in a Humvee alongside Grimlock.
trying to launch the
EMP cannon at them.
You know I'm right. There's an intern listening to this podcast. I can tell because I can see the viewers on YouTube right now, and there's somebody writing this shit down. They're like, hey, I know that we've already got half a Jurassic 4 already in the can, but get this. Some fat ass from Tampa said Ed Grimlock, and he's on the money.
All right. Okay, here's my other minor complaint.
Are we up to the Dinobots yet?
What, the Dinobots? Okay.
Are you going to talk about them?
Sure. I got a kick out of them because they're there just to be badasses, which is all the Dinobots have ever been. They're like, no, screw the Autobots. We don't like you. Screw the Decepticons. We don't like you. Stay out of our way and we won't kill you. And every now and then their interests will converge.
Yeah. I thought actually this was the most accurate portrayal of a Transformer since Optimus Prime in any of these movies. They got the Dinobots spot on.
Yeah, I got a real kick at it. I don't like Optimus Prime riding Grimlock.
That's hilarious. That's awesome.
I understand why they did it. Don't get me wrong. I am not head in sand going, well, Sean, don't you think people might confuse midnight rockers with rocking chairs? No, I am not like that. Okay, hang on. I get it. I cannot turn off the little part of me that goes, Grimlock would have bitten you in half and then wiped the Decepticons out anyway.
But didn't we learn from our previous movie review, How to Train Your Dragon, that if you dominate the dragon, it will be subservient to you? Optimus Prime dominated Grimlock.
I still don't think... There's a difference between, okay, we'll follow you into battle, and here, ride me like a pony.
Optimus Prime dominated Grimlock and rode him from behind.
Much like that photoshopped picture of Henry Cavill and Batman from the upcoming Batman movie.
Gay porn references, folks. Rattling your broadcasting network.
Have you seen that? Someone took the first picture of Henry Cavill as Superman and put the picture of Ben Affleck as Batman with his head down kind of thing and put them together, and it looks like he's holding him and giving it to him from behind.
Awesome. We don't have enough gay innuendo in Hollywood anyway.
Of course not.
All right. Okay, I don't have any complaints about this. I just know that you were going on and on and on Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, Friday nights at 9 o'clock, usually, about, oh my god, Optimus Prime riding the Dinobots, whatever will we do? Why wasn't Tom Bombadil in the movie?
Hang on. I said it bothered me because I have a backstory and an understanding of these characters. That's why it bothered me. And that's my podcast, and if I feel like ranting about things that bother me for no other reason than because it's my podcast, then I feel I can do that. Discussing things objectively, I get why they did it. Optimus Prime's riding a robotic dinosaur. 13-year-olds everywhere wet themselves in excitement.
That's right. I couldn't even get home. I messed my pants.
It's not like I don't get it. Again, my head is not in the sand here. This is just a minor thing that bothers me personally. And I freely understand that I am in the minority here and no one else cares. And everyone else is going, shut up, they're going to sell thousands of action figures with Prime riding Grimlock. I get it.
Are you kidding me? I'm making my wife buy me for Christmas this poster of Optimus Prime riding Grimlock triumphantly so I can frame it in the house.
Yeah, again, I get it. Don't get me wrong. My other minor complaint was I felt this movie didn't have necessarily the type of gravitas that you would need for Age of Extinction. If that's your tagline, I feel global peril should be a thing. Instead, we get... I felt there was more a greater chance of the world actually coming to an end in 3 than there was in this.
I'll give you that, but I felt like this movie was mostly centered on the Transformers becoming extinct, and they just sort of threw on humanity being extinct as, you know... as sort of an add-on, but I felt like since the bulk of the movie was the Autobots under fire from the humans and the humans sort of striking back in fear out of what happened in the third movie, I really liked all that. I liked the fact that they played on those very real. You know, I mean, look at this country.
I get it. I like that.
Arabs fly planes into two of our towers, and we're willing to sign away all kinds of rights. You know, we're willing to support endless wars for a little while until we realize people then die in those, and then we stop. You know, and then we've realized we have to pay for them. You know, things like that. But to me, it was a very real reaction.
Oh yeah, I like that.
You know, and that was all great.
Well, okay, here's the other thing you could have cut, since I'm kind of back on that. The White House chief of staff character.
But he was funny in Reno 911.
No, he wasn't. That's not a funny show.
That show is awesome. You shut your whore mouth.
Reno 911 is not funny.
Amazing. Hang on, let me ask my expert. Reno 911, funny or not funny?
Should I get my cavalcade of experts?
Seriously, it had its moments. It was, I mean, there were parts of it that were funny, and then there were times when...
I have four people who fall into the target demographic of Reno 911 who will take up arms if I threaten to put it in.
All right, let's move on.
He could have been cut, that whole scene with Kelsey Grammer and the head of the CIA could have been next.
Probably.
Just speaking of cuts and unnecessary scenes, and boy, I've been chief of staff for all of a day, and everybody sure is mad at me because you're annoying and incompetent. Shut up, douchebag.
So let's talk about predictions.
Okay, let's.
I think we've talked about the movie in and of itself a lot. We've kind of danced around the plot, but I think we both agreed the plot was...
The framework for things go boom.
No, that's not true. We've been talking for the last hour, you know, and through our discussion of characterization and editing, we have discussed the plot plenty, and we both agreed that there was a solid plot.
Before we get into predictions for the next couple of movies, and I believe there are two signed that have to include Mark Wahlberg.
Hooray!
And guess what? John Cena's WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Watch him go over Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam.
No, Brock Lesnar's winning, and then he's defending the title against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
I'm just saying, watch it happen. Watch Cena wins, LOL, and he'll hold it until Mania, and then drop it to Reigns in a screw job. Hey, you bring up Wahlberg. This is kind of where we're going to go. You're fine,
now,
Abby.
Hang on. Now I want to see John Cena riding Brock Lesnar to the ring.
We might get Paul Heyman riding Brock Lesnar to the ring.
No, that's not nearly as cool. That's like Stanley Tucci riding Grimlock.
Yeah, but no. First of all, Stanley Tucci is so much more awesome than Paul Heyman.
All right, moving on.
Anyway, the other thing I wanted to ask you, how did you like Optimus Prime as kind of this embittered badass?
I thought it was great. I mean, when you consider, you know, this is a very noble character. This is a character who has sacrificed a lot in order to protect the human race from the evil parts of his culture, only to have them turn on him first chance they get and start annihilating his brothers. You know, there was a great struggle in him, an internal struggle, because, you know, he wanted to hurt the humans, but, you know, he couldn't bring himself to do that. Until he shot Kelsey Grammer in the face. You know, he had it coming. But, I mean, I like the internal struggle with Optimus Prime. You know, you have the quintessential knight in shining armor. He is, you know, he is your lawful good paladin being put into these circumstances where, you know, that's all he can take and he can't take no more. I thought it was great. This is probably the first time I've actually enjoyed Optimus Prime in a while, since the first movie. I want to say this.
He was dead for most of the second one.
He was dead for most of the second one.
And it meant nothing.
I want to say this, like I said, I thought for the first time in four movies, the plot made sense, the motivations of the characters made sense. I thought that the evil robots, the motivations for what they had to do made sense.
Speaking of throwaway characters, hey, Galvatron.
Honestly, though, I like, you know, that and this kind of goes to the predictions that we were talking about offline. In the Transformers, the animated movie, Megatron gets beat to hell, and Unicron remakes him into Galvatron. It's the same character.
That's not what I meant. I meant he doesn't do anything in this movie.
He wasn't the main antagonist. Lockdown.
I know.
But they had to bring him back. No, they couldn't. They have to have a bad guy for the next two movies. So they, it was a classic. I don't remember where else I've seen this, but I've seen this before, where they focus, they bring back another bad guy, but they focus on a different bad guy, so that you know, so that they
like the other like Transformers 2 and 3. Hey, here's Megatron back. He was gonna wipe out humanity. Oh wait, he serves the Fallen. Hey, wait, Megatron's back. Oh, Sentinel Prime.
I was thinking of something not Transformers, but that's true too. No, look. You focus on Lockdown so that you can have some time dedicated to bringing back Megatron, so that Megatron can then be the feature bad guy in the next two movies. Makes perfect sense.
I don't know. That was the scene that they could have cut, I felt. The scene where Galvatron hunts down Optimus Prime. And they what happened? Why isn't it doing what I told it to do? I haven't even properly beta tested this thing, but there's glitches.
Well, that's the thing. They needed to do that scene. You could have shaved it down a minute or two, but I think the scene was necessary.
Oh no, because that whole protracted scene ends with him being captured by Lockdown, and again, protracted scene on the okay.
But they also had to establish that Megatron.
Cut Bumblebee throwing a hissy fit at an upgrade.
Yes, that whole sequence could have been cut. All right, so let's talk about predictions. At the end of this movie, Optimus Prime goes into space, and he's going after the creators that want him and the rest of the Knights back, the Knights being the Dinobots. Okay. In Transformers, the animated movie, there were these mechanical five-faced beings called the Quintessons. And the Quintessons would judge the Transformers, and regardless of whether or not you were guilty or innocent, they dropped you in a pit of Sharkticons. Fantastic. I have a feeling that the creators are going to be some form of the Quintessons. They're clearly grasping from things from the later Transformers series, starting with the movie. So I suspect they're going to use the Quintessons in some way. And if they're going to use the Quintessons, they got to give me Sharkticons. Oh, Sharkticons. I can't wait to see what Michael Bay does with them.
Ugh. What's the biggest Jaws shark? Double.
we're gonna put the fishies in the bowl, and we're gonna put Prime in the fishbowl, and we're gonna make them fight the Sharky.
If they do that, they may as well reintroduce Hot Rod and the Universal Greeting. And then I demand we get to the Junkticon so I can hear Weird Al play over the sequence where they all dance in happiness.
Now I want the next one to be called Ba Weep, Grana Weep, Ninny Bob. Transformers, Ba Weep, Grana Weep, Ninny Bob.
I would accept that. As long as, again, over the background, we played Dare to be Stupid.
Moving on.
I think you're correct in that Optimus Prime going after the creators, we get something along those lines. If I were to plan out the next two movies, and I don't know how they would do the one in between, but the middle movie is Prime, who, without humans, mind you, so wait, he's going to pick one up from a space shuttle on the way out, I guess, because we have to have humans for some reason in scenes like this, but he confronts the creators who actually wanted him and the Dinobots back because they're the most powerful of the Transformers left, and they have to fight off Unicron. Prime leaves them to be devoured by Unicron because they're terrible people, and he returns to Earth, and three is him and a couple of humans trying to fight off Unicron and keep him from devouring Earth.
I think you're close. I think Prime is going to get to the creators just in time to see Unicron devour the planet.
And I'd be down with that, too.
And then Prime has to turn around, head back to Earth, and tell Earthlings, you must listen to me. You're under attack by a giant planet-eating Transformer. And they're going to say, no, Prime, we hate all robots. You don't understand this Battle of Chicago. And there'll be that interplay.
And now the Battle of Hong Kong. You guys wrecked China.
You wreck things everywhere you go. You don't understand. A giant planet-sized Transformer is going to come and eat your planet. Like the Cloud from Fantastic Four? Fuck that movie. No. It'd be awesome if Prime actually said, fuck that movie. But no, I think... I agree with you. I think that Prime's going to get to the creators just in time to see them being devoured by Unicron, and Unicron's going to start making his way towards Earth, and they're going to have to, and the humans are going to have to reunite with the Transformers to stop Unicron from devouring the Earth.
And apparently, well, here's my other thing about that. We get it. I might even have them like believe him. I mean, we get a little bit of interplay and whatnot, and then enough people believe him. Maybe we can finally get the president on screen to mock Obama. No, we do not believe in the Autobots and their...
Here's what I would tell you.
Apparently, like, we wish to adopt their ability to regenerate, so then I can charge you for regeneration.
Here's what I would tell you. They don't believe Optimus. As a matter of fact, Optimus, the government brings Optimus down again and holds him prisoner. Like, no, we don't believe you. And Autobots try to rescue him, and they get captured. The humans become really adept at capturing Transformers. At that point, there's a long range space station out at, say, Mars, or Jupiter or something. Far enough, close enough in our solar system that the next plot point will make sense, but far enough away that there's time to react. But Unicron devours one of the planets in our solar system and takes out the space shuttle along the space station along with it. And that's when the humans go, "Fuck, he's right," and and then they let Optimus Prime out, like, "Will you help us?" "No, fuck off."
I have interstellar jets attached to my legs. You all stay here and die.
No, at that point, I would love to see like Optimus just say, "Screw you, people! I tried to warn you about this, and you threw me in a dungeon." And he rescues the Autobots, and they actually leave the Earth, or they go to leave the Earth. And this is where you have Mark Wahlberg say, "But don't you understand? Can't you have faith in humanity? We're an imperfect species." And Prime, like, seriously, again with this. That sort of thing. But that's how I see the second movie going.
Well, it has to go with... The major point here has to be we get Mark Wahlberg on a space shuttle in a suit, and they fly out to Mars to try and stop Unicron, and we can get Transformers in space.
Yeah, something along those lines. I would agree with you. I think they're going to get Mark Wahlberg, they're going to get Bruce Willis, Steve Buscemi, and a bunch of...
Bruce Willis died in that movie. We have to get Ben Affleck. As long as he's right. Not to be Batman anymore, I'd say do it.
That's right. We have to get. That'd be awesome if they can get the entire crew from Armageddon and say, "Okay."
Michael Clark Duncan died in real life.
and the same plot too. They're gonna launch them into space so they can plant a bomb, and blow up Unicron. It'll be fantastic.
But yeah, here's the other reason I want this. Because if Michael Bay, of all the kind of hacky, I appeal to the lowest common denominator directors, can make giant planet-eating thing real and work, Marvel has to give me a decent version of Galactus.
So, and I agree with you, I just wanted to add to that. But if they ever give us a real-life Galactus, though, he can't be wearing the stupid top hat. But
look, here's my thing. I don't mind that in Silver Surfer, we moved away from guy who feeds on antimatter, and he shapeshifts, and he's got the suit and the big hat. I mean, you move away from things like that because they don't translate onto film well.
No.
I get that. If you wish to make Galactus this force of nature who's like Lovecraftian in origin, okay. Giant space cloud. Not okay.
It was a euphemism for global warming.
Oh, piss off.
And acid rain, see?
Oh, yeah, acid rain and Victor Von Doom being the evil industrialist who corrupts governments.
That's right. Now you understand.
And Jessica Alba, who should have died.
So I don't think you have the Decepticons playing a major role. I think having the Decepticons in the second one with Unicron would be overkill. I think you have them sort of lying in wait, and because you've got to send the Autobots with the humans off planet to go deal with Unicron so that he doesn't show up to Earth. Here's what I'm thinking, right? The humans and the Autobots mount a last ditch effort in space to take out Unicron. And Unicron, because they're fighting in space, still causes a significant amount of damage on Earth. And with it, you know, Prime gets knocked unconscious or, you know, is seemingly killed. A lot of the Autobots are slaughtered, but Unicron gets taken out. This gives ample opportunity for Galvatron and a re-mechanized force of Decepticons the opportunity to take over Earth, and that's your third movie.
They have to come back and liberate.
Yeah, the humans have to find Prime because he's lost in space somewhere, you know, seemingly thought dead, but there's
on the moon or something.
Yeah, there's reason to believe he's out there somewhere. They just got to find him. But Mark Wahlberg and a team of humans have to go out and find Optimus Prime somewhere in space. Get him with a new army of Autobots, and they have to save Earth from from Galvatron, who has conquered the planet.
Yeah, I'd be down for most of that.
So you've got your movies, Michael Bay. You're welcome. Rattlesnake Broadcasting is always here to help.
Yeah, help. God. Because when these get made, more than likely I'm going to have to see them so I can tear them apart on a podcast again. It's a cycle, you see?
Indeed. All right, speaking of cycles, I don't think we have anything left to say about this. In as far as arguments go, I thought this was a rather pleasant one. What's going on in your world?
Well, as far as pleasant arguments go, I think that you two people can have two differing points of view without coming to screaming at each other their own point of view and not listening. You enjoyed it. I hated roughly 65% of the movie, give or take. If I were to break up like portions of it, not chronologically, but this about this movie, this I didn't like, this I liked, and I go down the list. I disliked more than half of kind of the elements necessarily. It doesn't mean I'm right or you're wrong. We can have a discussion with differing points of view. I don't have to. There's no winning. You express your point of view. I agree or disagree. And look, here's the other thing. If you need 3 hours of away time from your near teenager, you just need to regain your sanity. Here, whole thing, start to finish. You leave. You get them snacks. You put them in the theater before the previews, and then trips there and back, you might get 4 hours of there's no teenagers in the house, I can enjoy the quiet. So it has its uses, and this movie didn't make my eyes wish to bleed, which other movies, some by Michael Bay, some not, have. So yeah, as far as my world goes, there will not be Everyone Loves a Bad Guy tomorrow. For a couple of reasons. One, it's the 4th of July, and that's a federal holiday here in the United States, and I don't necessarily feel like doing anything for it. Even if it wasn't, or was, if either of these things happened, I would wind up not doing it. My youngest brother, who was actually born on the 2nd of July, we pushed his party back to the 4th so that my dad and stepmom could be here and celebrate with us. So I'll be doing that, so Everyone Loves a Bad Guy is taking a break on Friday. However, it's just going to be a little calm before the storm, because when I come back the week after, I'm starting a trek, at least part of a trek, through professional wrestling villains. So everybody out there,
why would you start with that now when that's the same week the Planet of the Apes come out, and that's just screaming, do Planet of the Apes?
I don't want to talk about Planet of the Apes.
Synergy. Synchronicity.
I am
hashtags,
not
marketing.
I am not dictating my schedule by whatever random movie comes out that week.
Twitter.
No.
Google.
No, I'm going to start professional wrestling villains, famous heels, and whatnot. I'm not quite sure if I want to do it chronologically or by territory or by. Yeah, so there's still a few kind of moving parts. My idea off the top of my head is the first show is going to be pre-mid-70s territory wrestling villains, because a lot of guys moved around and you had kind of the same, you were the same character in like World Class Championship that you were in the AWA and whatnot, so we can just talk about some of the really successful ones. Then you have the NWA consolidation, the WWF expansion, and then eras within that, and then a few guys who get their own shows because they're just that awesome. Bobby Heenan. The Four Horsemen probably get their own. I mean, again, but those are my loose ideas for the moment. So, fans of Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, be aware. I'm going to start trying to tackle some famous pro wrestling villains going forward for a little bit. So, as far as that goes, that's what's coming up. Tomorrow, day after tomorrow, Saturday, July 5th, UFC 175, Weidman versus Machida. Also, Ronda Rousey appears. I got coverage in the MMA zone of 411mania.com. So to all the listeners out there,
it's gonna suck.
Save your money. You don't need to spend the $60. I have coverage. The voodoo curse will strike. Incidentally, I told you this, but to anyone who hasn't heard this story, I provided coverage for the last major event. Which one was it? Fight Night 44. A nice man in the comments section of the live coverage said, Robert Winfrey, I am planning to attend UFC on Fox 12 live and in person. Please do not cover it because I want an event that is not filled with decisions and fights that suck. So other people have become aware of my voodoo curse. And to that gentleman, I said, Larry Zonk will have to find someone else to cover UFC on Fox 12. I will respect your request. So, UFC 175, probably going to suck. Feel free to blame me covering it. And to the UFC, I have said before, you can pay me off. I will stop doing coverage for $60 a month. And your events can go back to being awesome. Just think about it. That's all I'm saying.
They really can't, though.
No, they can't. Because Jose Aldo got injured again. Oh, God. Whole different topic that I wish to address further. In next week's column, not this week. This week, I actually take a look at Lyoto Machida and how he will surpass, he will firmly cement himself into the discussion for greatest of all time if he beats Chris Weidman. Because titles in different weight classes is rare. Titles in weight classes in divisions that are fully defined and have strong champions has not happened yet. So Machida can put himself into a very unique class if he's able to beat Chris Weidman. I examined that in the MMA zone of 411mania.com this week. This Sunday, I have an interesting little show. The 411 Ground and Pound radio show will be live at 8 p.m. Eastern time. This will allow us to review UFC 175, myself and Jeff Harris. And the fun part, Mark Radlitz will be live covering the Ultimate Fighter 19 finale. Have you seen this card, Mark?
Nope. I'm literally going to put a picture of a time clock at the top of it. Punching in, punch out.
Oh, you get to... But since that will be happening on Sunday, the UFC is making a foray onto events on Sunday to see how they do. And we'll be headlined by BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar, but you'll probably get me and Jeff with a little bit of live reaction to some of that, including what I assume to be a catchweight fight. I maintain BJ Penn is probably not making that weight cut. And if he is, he will look awful and quit on the stool between rounds 2 and 3 or 3 and 4 after getting beat up by Frankie Edgar. But you can tune in for that. Both of those things are fun. My last episode of Everyone Loves a Bad Guy, I talked about the Decepticons. I had a lot of fun by myself. Thanks, jerks, for not calling in. I appreciate all my listeners. I really do. I mean, and anyone listening to this or any of the shows on the Ride Legend Broadcasting Network, thank you guys so very much. You have hundreds of thousands of these things to choose from. You get to millions if you speak or understand a second language. Almost, not a dead language. Spoken language. Got to be spoken. I mean, if you speak Mandarin or Cantonese, you're just inundated.
Oh my God, get on with it.
We appreciate you choosing us. And I believe that's all I have to plug. Again, next week's column will likely examine injuries in the UFC since Jose Aldo.
Fire Jose Aldo. Fire Jose Aldo.
Since Jose Aldo injured his glavin again, and UFC 176 now has no marketable main event. And no marketable main event. I saw the co-main event today. I'm like, ah, no. I was barely interested in spending money on Aldo and Mendez. And only because I was hoping that a legitimate challenger might make Jose Aldo go, hey, wait, I'm better than this guy, and I will kill him in the first round.
Again.
Again, fire Jose Aldo. You also no. want Cain Velasquez fired, let's be fair.
I do. No, this isn't an MMA show, so I'm not going to get into a whole thing here, but...
I almost wanted to do a one-of with that when that was announced, just so we can all vent about injuries in MMA.
Yes. Deconstructing Jose Aldo. Oh, wait, he already is deconstructed.
Seriously, Cain Velasquez, Jose Aldo, Anthony Pettis. Look at the amount of fights they've had over the last 3 years.
They're made of glass. Actually,
glass
the one thing
that... thinks they're weak.
There's
Sugar
one thing
Glass that... looks at this and goes, hey, can we use these guys instead of us at movie studio props because they break easier?
So the one thing that we should throw out there is we initially were not going to do Planet of the Apes, but as it turns out, my wife is busy that Friday night, so I'm making myself busy by going to see Planet of the Apes in theaters. It's a continuation of the reboot that came out a few years ago with James Franco. So now Robert's going to go see it, and we'll review it the week after it comes out.
Possibly. Gary Oldman's in it, and that's always a good thing. So
and Alvarez from Oz.
The presence of Kirk Acevedo does nothing for me one way or the other.
Ooh.
It's a big-budget action movie. I do not care that there's a supporting character who was in Oz.
All right. In the interest of time here, I want to thank, for those of you who found this review, I appreciate you tuning in and listening, even if it was only for a few minutes. Unfortunately, we normally would have done this on Blog Talk Radio.
Boo.
But for some odd reason, we were having, I guess you were having trouble calling in, then I was having trouble calling in.
I tried to call in the 15 minutes early, and it said you're on. I mean, I got the nice little British lady's voice, and your show will begin in so long. Welcome on, and I had the thing up, and then 5 minutes later, it's like, no, you've disconnected. I tried to call back. No, Blog Talk, BTR host one is full. Try two or three, or call support, and I, oh, screw that. I tried two, nope, no go. Tried calling in on the landline. Nope, no go. A bad day at the office for Blog Talk.
Right.
Apparently they're holding a memorial for Steve Jobs.
So we were able to sort of, and once I took care of my family and everything, that who were coming home at the exact same time this was starting and all this was going on, we were able to get it together and get this going on Google, and we'll try to get it uploaded onto BTR when it's actually functional again, so you'll have an opportunity to hear it there. But again, for those of you who tuned in tonight to hear our review of Age of Extinction, we certainly appreciate you. Speaking of reviews, Sean Comer and I wrapped up our Season 2 review of Orange is the New Black, so all four parts, 1, 2, 3, and 4, are on the Rad Legend Broadcasting Network on Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, and iTunes. If you thought this conversation about Transformers was fun and exciting, you should have heard me and Sean talk about it on The Long Road to Ruin this past Tuesday night. Talked about the first three movies. That's where the whole impression of Michael Bay came from. So
you don't have to justify that. It's just awesome.
And a long discussion of the Minstrel Bots was had. There should be a Casual Heroes WrestleCast coming out in the next day or so, but it's not up already.
Cena wins, LOL.
Something like that. I
would rather have John Cena as champion than Randy Orton, than another failed Randy Orton experiment.
I'd like to see them fire Randy Orton right after they get
yes.
done with Jose Aldo. But that's beside the point.
I think with Orton, we've invested so much time and money into him near the top of the card, we can't just call it a loss. Never mind that we're trying to cut budgetary expenses. Hey, here's a guy who's not doing anything for you.
This Tuesday night is the Metal Hammer of Doom. Jesse Starcher will be joining Robert Cooper, and I will be
Body Count.
Yes, we'll be reviewing the new Body Count album, Manslaughter. The following week, right now, tentatively penciled in, Tuesday night is the Whiskey Rebellion. It'll be 90 minutes of myself, Gavin Napier, and Chris Evans of the Casual Heroes talking news of the day and whatever else comes to mind.
Will the Mobile Sensation be making an appearance?
Good question.
Oh, God.
Anywho, but that means that then Long Road to Ruin will be moving to Thursday. And we'll be starting our four-part look at Batman the Animated Series. Assuming that stays the same, both Tuesday shows will be staying on Thursdays going forward. And from the cheap seats, we'll be moving till, I guess, every other Wednesday. And then we can alternate the Wednesday slot with a review or something. Right now, you know, Sean and I are now done with Orange is the New Black, so that frees up some space.
I like how nobody bothers me in my time slot, because Friday evenings is just the worst.
Yeah, for Friday evening, people got shit to do. You're good. You, no one's going to bother you.
And no one gets like, oh, there's that guy. Eh, I'll catch it in the morning type of thing. Nobody cares if I go live then.
Yeah, no.
I made a wise tactical decision with that slot.
You really did. Also, if people wanted to go on Mondays, it's not like you're going to have a lot of competition. We're all watching wrestling, so
I could go to Monday as well. I have I've debated it. Maybe I could go. Maybe I could do what all those professionals do and do twice a week.
I tell you what,
my first show can be family friendly, and my second one can be Unleashed.
It's a swig of water for the working man. All right, so that's it. Again, look for our review, because Robert's not going to leave me hanging, of Planet of the Apes. And shortly after Planet of the Apes, will be Guardians of the Galaxy. So look forward to that. At some point, I think Robert and I need to go in. Robert and I need to go into the Wayback Machine and have this very same argument, this time, though, about Godzilla. He loved it. The last one that just came out.
Okay.
Only because I know you loved it, and I was sort of nonplussed by it, so probably be worth having that discussion, if I can remember what was in the movie.
I was just going to say, if you meant like the 1998 Godzilla.
That was awesome!
That movie...
Earthworms! Puppy! Twitter! Alright, I'm done.
I used the 1998 Godzilla movie to fall asleep to. Much like I use American football to nap during the day.
Oh, there you go. All right. I'm tired. I'm going to bed.
All right. Again, Radlichen Broadcasting Network. Make sure to check us out. iTunes, Stitcher, Blog Talk, occasionally YouTube, stuff like this. 5 stars. We appreciate it. Well, rate us what you think we've earned. Let's be clear about that.
Two snaps and a twist.
Interestingly enough, that chick did not need to get either wasted or more sun to get a tan.
Pardon?
Note from the beginning of Transformers. Daughter gets out, 17 years old, and goes, hey, only 2 more weeks, and then we get to go get a tan and get wasted.
Oh, yeah, she was pretty orange.
No, wait a minute. You're tan. You do not need to go orange. And you're 17.
All right. If you won't say it, goddammit, I will.
All right.
Radlichen Broadcasting Network, folks. Be well, be safe, and for Robert Winfrey, I should say, and the Radlichen Broadcasting Network, I am the Mandated Reporter, Mark Radlich. Be well, be safe, and behave.